Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores!
Carlson.
Yes, Carlson. Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of Keeping Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the largest running fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys, one of whom has a baby who just moved to a room a lot closer to the recording studio, so I've been asked not to scream to start the show anymore, but I'm still going to chat, and we're still going to have fun. I'm your host, Ilan Dubrovsky, and with me to break down all of the exciting upcoming playoff matchups and take a look from a fantasy perspective, of course, it is my very good friend, the fantasy hockey robot, the poop-out prognostication, the IPP MVP himself, Brian Kamm. Brian, how's it going?
It's good, Elon. I gotta say, it's awkward. It's like we're hearing the second half intro on the first half, but
I
get it.
I wasn't so low energy. I tried to still bring a little.
It's a little, it's a bit of a different vibe off the top. So, like,
I'm just not screaming. I feel like I don't have to scream.
It's like I've been traded to a team and I'm used to being the last one off the ice in the pregame skate. And now I'm on a new team. And someone else has to be the guy who's off the ice last at the pregame skate.
Okay.
And I just have to pretend it was me. Like, I have to pretend that that guy's not there so I can get into my usual game mode. Anyway, I'm happy to be here. We got playoffs coming, which, like, I've said this 1,000 times probably, but the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs is my favorite sports time of the year. Not just hockey time, sports time. Better than like opening week of the regular season, better than March Madness or whatever, any championship. First week of the playoffs, hockey on every single night, just like every time of night, intense games, high level competition. I love it. I can't get enough of it. So I'm very excited to be on the outset of this. And of course, drafting a fantasy playoff team to make the games just a little more exciting.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's a lot of fun. I think these playoffs are going to be especially fun, like for round one. Obviously, now that I'm saying it, it'll be the exact opposite, but I kind of like all these matchups. Like, I don't think there's any crazy like mismatches. It's not like Arizona's up against Colorado or something like that. You know, I think they're all going to be fun. I know that there's somewhere like I have a pick of who I think is going to win, but I could see all of them going either way, and I wouldn't be like too shocked, which I think is going to make it a lot of fun. And yeah, Brian, a special I guess notice to the listeners for this fun show that we're about to do. No ads. We're just going to go straight the whole way through.
Surprise.
No,
just our
talk,
gift to
just
you.
Just talk playoffs.
It's playoffs time. That's what we do in the playoffs. We get, no, it's not what we do, but no ads for you. We're going to go straight through. It's going to be a bit of a shorter show too. And we're really excited to just bring it, bring the heat for that much time. Also, Elon, I'm looking at the Colorado Arizona season series.
Mm-hmm.
They played each other 4 times, and Colorado won 3 of them.
I don't know. Why did you bring this up?
I don't know.
Why is this content that's interesting?
Because you said, I was hoping to come in with something like contrarian, because you said it's not like Colorado versus Arizona.
So you like start sentences before knowing how they're
going
to end.
Without knowing where they're going. Okay. I was doing the research as I spoke. They did meet up. Do you remember that they met in the first round in 2020?
Yeah, like not, it wasn't like the real first round, right? Wasn't it like the play-in round?
These games were in August. Colorado won the series. I think Arizona made it through the play-in to get wrecked by Colorado won the last 2 games by a combined score of 14-2 in the process of winning in 5.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about if we think that Seattle will put up a bigger fight than Arizona did that year. In due time, though, we'll start in the East. So, yeah, I guess before we start everything, let's mention, of course, presented by DauberHockey.com. Super excited to always say that. And they're going to have a lot of awesome content all throughout the playoffs. And, of course, Frozen Tools is what I use to prep the show. But, yeah, I guess let's talk about some playoff pools, right? A lot of people are in them. Maybe there's some people who are drafting them tomorrow, recording this Sunday night. Maybe not. Maybe you've already drafted and this will be just like lessons you wish you had heard earlier. But, yeah, obviously there's 2 kinds of playoff pools. There's the most typical kind where you're just drafting for the entire playoffs. And then there's the one that we made up, which is the Kevin Carlson playoff pool, which we're just drafting for the first round. And then we're going to like eliminate some people and then we're going to redraft again for the second round. But just in terms of like general playoff pools that most people are in, any tips or thoughts on like the strategy for that? I got a few ideas, but I know you got some too.
Yeah, sure. A couple tips. So as we're drafting, I think the first tip, like, of course, my very first tip is, like, don't take it too seriously. It's the playoffs. Anything could happen, like, literally, for all the players. So, like, I wouldn't want to be, like, thinking, deliberating, agonizing over these picks. Like, let yourself free. Like, save that for the drafts next year in the regular season. Give yourself a bit of an easier time. Just go with your gut. And actually, that's really hard to do for some of us, speaking from personal experience, but I am, I think I'm doing better this year at going with my gut and just making quick picks than I have been in the past. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the thing that I like to think of it like is like the regular season, that's like intense. Like we're addicted, you know? And now we're like weaning ourselves off of our addiction. Like we're going to have a long summer of no fantasy. So this is like our opportunity to like kind of ease a little bit, put on the patch, which is fantasy playoff hockey. And then, yeah, then we'll be able to be ready for the off season. But yeah, like it's so hard to predict. In fact, like one of the ideas that I've had, like the year that I was the most successful, the year that I won the Keeping Carlson playoff pool, I drafted like a bunch of players from the Islanders and they happened to like go really far. And like no one else was picking Islanders, so I was like, all right, I'll just take like the top 3-4 likely scorers on the team, and then things went really well. So I feel like, yeah, one strategy could be like if everyone, like, you know, don't be upset if, like, let's say you end up getting like 8th pick and then McDavid is gone and Drysdale's gone and Kucherov's gone, like you could pick again. This is a strategy for like a pool where you're drafting for the entire playoffs, you know, and you'll have to like adjust on the fly, especially if you don't know the draft order going in. Pick a team, and who knows, the LA Kings won that year back when they were the 8th seed. Like anything could happen. So I think it's fun to just not stress about like trying to get like I'd rather take top players from like not great teams rather than take like the, you know, middling or bottom players of the teams you expect to go far, because you're probably not going to win that way anyways, because someone else will have like McKinnon and Rantanen. So if you have like Evan Rodriguez ahead of whatever, Matty Beniers, I don't know if that's really doing so much for you.
Right. So like those differences, you can totally go more on vibes. Sandy in the chat is also saying too, it's like that's actually viable to go on vibes and not worry. And like, again, in our playoff format, it's unique. And sorry, it's too late to join if you didn't get in, but you're just picking for the first round. It's a very fun format. You're all free to copy it if you so desire. Try it out.
What if we weren't? How would we even enforce that? Imagine if you said, by the way, you are not allowed to copy this format. Oh, we will come after you. We have lawyers.
We have lawyers, but no legal entitlement to tell you not to copy. But I know a lawyer. I think my other like tip is to, you know, team-wise, like Ilana, like what you're saying, like, you know, you don't have to be too committed to, like, you can pick a team, try and pick a dark horse and go for it. And really, like in the like playoffs long pools, that's how you win, right? You have the most players on the team that goes the deepest rather than getting like piecemeal across the league. And that's also one of my other playoff pool tips, which is don't spread yourself too thin. Like it's okay to pick a couple teams to live and die by. So in the Keeping Carlson playoff pool, heretofore known as the KKPP, I had Hughes and Hamilton as my first two picks. I wasn't sweating that at all. Although I did have Jesper Brad available to me for the next two rounds and I really wanted him. I decided we just have 10 player roster, so I felt like 30% Devils might be a little much,
especially if it's like three Devils all going against Igor Shesterkin for
yes,
a round.
Exactly, like it's very possible that the Devils could get stymied, and then I have a couple Jets too, and I was very close to having a third in Nick Ehlers. I have Scheifele and Dubois, so like I think it's okay to load up on a couple teams, especially if you're going the distance, because if you make it to the finals. If you're at the top of your pool standings heading into the quarterfinals or the finals or whatever, and you only have one player, and it might be like, let's say it's Tampa and you have Kucherov, but the player you're against has like four depth Lightning and maybe two or three depth players from the other team, it's unlikely Stamkos is going to outscore them all. So yeah, it's okay to load up. I would try and pick a couple teams to focus on.
Yeah, and also I know a lot of people are talking about like trying to predict even the series length. You know, maybe you don't want to take a team where they're just going to play
forget it.
Don't even try. All right. But anyways, let's get into each series and we'll give our thoughts as we go what will happen. Also, I'm looking at some fantasy news, and also I like to look at the playoffs as like, I know that in general we don't want to read too much into the playoffs, right? Like a player has a huge break on the playoffs. You don't want to just say like for sure that now they're going to be a star next year. I guess it's a very small sample size, but it is still a sample of games. And so there are some things I'm going to be watching for to help inform some of my decisions for next year. So we can talk through some of those. I have some points on each of these series of things I'm curious to watch, either for the series itself or for potentially next year. So let's start with Boston versus Florida. We got the top team in the whole league against last year's top team, which is kind of fun. Obviously, Florida is a bit different than they were last year, though, you know, they lost Huberdeau and they gained Matty Tkachuk. In some ways, you could say they should be even better. But, you know, obviously the standings didn't turn out that way. But and the goaltending is very different, right? Florida's going into the series with Alex Lyon. Let's start with him, Brian. I'm assuming he's getting game one, like regardless of Bobrovsky's health. How could he not? He like literally like dragged the Panthers into the playoffs at this point. He's got like so much money on the line. I wonder how it feels to know like if he blows it, he'll probably go back to getting like, he'll probably still get a contract for next year, but maybe like a mil. You know, imagine if he takes Florida over Boston, an upset of the best team in the league, that's 2-3 mil per year, like that he just earns by winning one playoff series.
Yeah, you say per year, and it could just be a 1-year contract. Like, teams, I think, are by now gun shy about betting big on goalies. I feel like the last goalie that we might see a team have bet big on was Braden Holtby.
Brian, what about Jack Campbell last year?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Well, to me, that was like the lesson for the whole NHL, minus the Oilers. And now I think the Oilers have caught up. Like, generally, I mean, also, there's
Washington,
a lag.
Washington bet big on Kemper. It just turned out to work out fine. But still, that didn't, I mean, that was also like a big expensive contract.
Yeah. How much is Kemper making?
Six mil? It's a lot.
It's Campbell-ish. Yeah. And you know what? Grubauer was signed since. Okay. All right. So my Holtby example, I think at the time I felt like that should be enough for people to know that we're done with this. But I guess not. Kemper's just above five. I think that's I think if you're going big on a goalie, five mil. Is about the cap, which stinks for, you know, most goalies in the league, unless you're in what we would consider like our tier one or tier two goalies, who can be worth that money. I mean, I guess Campbell's at 5'2", but he's playing like not even in the league. Anyway, you're asking me about Alex Lyon.
Well, I should point out that Andy is actually correcting in the chat and saying that the scuttlebutt is that Bobrovsky is going to get game one. So we'll
right.
see.
Which is what, because Lyon gave up 4 to Carolina on 34 shots. That's an .882 save percentage. So not a pretty, and we sort of guessed on the show that Lyon, you know, would have to carry his team into the playoffs. And if they made it, he'd start, and that there wasn't room for a bad game. There was room for one bad game in there. But that bad game followed so many freaking good games. And yeah, Lyon really, really carried the Panthers into the playoffs by giving up 2 or fewer goals in 7 consecutive starts, where the Panthers won 6 of those and lost 1 of those in overtime, with a .952 save percentage for Lyon. So we'll see. Like, I can't be sure. Who knows? Are you going to play your 10 million guy, or are you going to play your third stringer? It's a tough choice for the Panthers, which goes back to our goalie conversation that we just had. I could see either one starting game one and then not starting game two if things don't go well. And I think there's a pretty decent chance it won't go well, right? Like, Boston is good. They can overpower you, of course. We don't know the health status of Patrice Bergeron, which has kind of a big impact on how great Boston can be. You know, anytime they're missing any of Pasternak, Bergeron, or Marchand, like, that's enough. Like, those guys are such a big part of that team that it does make a sizable difference. You can live and die by them. But I still think Boston is heavily favored, and also favored to make life really difficult for any Panthers goalie they face.
Yeah, we both took Bergeron in our KKPP draft, so hopefully he'll play and do well for us. I'm curious, I think Brad Marchand is someone who is falling a lot in these playoff pools, just because, you know, overall, if you look at the points, like, it's a very subpar season for him, only 67 points in 73 games. So his first like sub-100 point pace, well, no, first sub like point per game pace since like 2015, first sub like 94 point pace for the same time. Like, this is a real big fall from what Marchand has been doing for a long time. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he's going to be good value in playoff pools. Like, also, even just looking back to last year's playoffs, the Bruins ended up not making it out of the first round, but in the 7 games they played, he had 11 points. Like, Marchand is like awesome in the playoffs. And also, it's like,
yeah,
I feel like this season, like, the Bruins knew they were going to be first for so long. Like, I wonder if just they weren't all trying their hardest. You know, too bad it didn't work out for Bergeron, who's still like banged up. I think it would have been nice if, like, if they knew that they didn't need to win so many games, that maybe Bergeron could have like healed up like before now. But regardless, Marchand, I just have a feeling he's got another gear that he's ready to unleash.
I mean, it would concern me a little if the Bruins, like, maybe they sure, they weren't going quite as hard, but if they took off their foot off the gas, like, that's not a way to go into the playoffs, especially when you're facing a team that had to, like, pedal to the metal their way into this matchup. And, like, we've seen that happen. I feel like we used to see that happen more often in, like, the former playoff formats, like the 1-8 and 2-7. You saw, like, the super comfortable, cozy top half, even 1-4 versus the hungry and desperate bottom half. And it sometimes made the top half a little more ripe for the picking. But for Brad Marchand, Elon, I don't know if it's going more on a limb to say that he's going to be good or he's going to be bad. Like, he did have a rough finish to the season. Marchand, like, he started the season 46 points in 40 games, then 21 points only in his final 33 games. That's just a 52-point pace for Brad Marchand, which is basically half of what we would have expected. I dug into it a bit just before we came on air, Elon, to see, like, what happened. Why was Marchand doing so poorly? Well, overall, he had a 6.6 shooting percentage in that stretch. That's about half what we'd normally expect. But I think that the glaring thing is that Marchand, in his final 33 games, had only 6 power play points. Compare that to having picked up 23 power play points in his first 40 games, right? Then following with 6 in his final 33. So that's 1 power play point every 5.5 games versus 1 every, like, not even every 2 games. So, and you add on the missing power play points, and Marchand is back up to basically a point per game over the stretch that he's been cold. And I dug in even a little further to see, like, okay, what were those missing points? Because he wasn't trying or things weren't going well? No, I don't think so. I think he had a low points participation rate, 50% on the power play versus 65%, and a low power play shooting percentage. He was shooting less than half his usual 13% on the power play. So I think that's it for Brad Marchand. There was some power play challenges that don't seem like they're going to sustain themselves, assuming everything regresses as we'd expect it to. And as you said, Marchand thrives in the playoffs, right? Like, this is exactly where he gets under people's skin enough that they start trying to take liberties or, you know, like, take extra pokes and prods at him. And that's when he'll dance around you and do his thing.
Yeah. And by the way, speaking of that power play, it's going to be interesting to watch what happens on defense, right? Because it's been Hampus Lindholm running that top power play for the last little while over Charlie McAvoy. Hasn't stopped McAvoy from piling up the points. So he has 7 points in his last 8 games to end the season. McAvoy ended the season with a 64-point pace, a career year in terms of his point pace, which is pretty wild considering this is the year he got bumped from the power play. Meanwhile, Lindholm, obviously a very good year himself, 53 points overall. So yeah, I think this will just be more data to help us to try to figure out what to do next year in fantasy drafts, because obviously McAvoy, regardless of his total points, like, he takes a hit if he's not going to be on that top power play. But at the same time, well, yeah, so I'll be curious to see, because I remember there was actually one playoffs, wasn't it where, like, it started with, like, Grzelcyk or something as the power play quarterback? And I remember by the end, McAvoy took over and ended up having a really great playoffs. And then the next year, he was the guy running it for the whole season. So I feel like there is going to be something, especially if the Bruins go deep and we see a lot of games, it'll be interesting to see who ends up holding that spot, like, when it's crunch time.
Yeah, that will be a really interesting storyline to watch. Like, Lindholm and McAvoy both locked down long-term for big money. McAvoy's a little bigger, $9.5 million all the way through to the end of the 28-29 season. Lindholm signed for the same amount of time for $6.5 million. There's a 4-year age gap between them. Like, Lindholm is 4 years older, so that makes me think that they'd prefer McAvoy. But also, these guys have their contracts expiring at the exact same time. So maybe age ain't nothing but a number here for Boston. They're just going to want to see who's the best fit for that top unit. And playoff games where the stakes are not hot, can't be higher, is a great time for us to get some extra data.
Yeah, and then 2 other things I'm watching for. Like, definitely Carter Verhaeghe on the Panthers had, like, an insane end to the season. He ended the season with 73 points and 42 goals. Like, just such an amazing season for Verhaeghe. And that actually built on what was a great playoffs last year. Maybe we should have predicted from based on what we saw in the playoffs that this was going to happen, because Verhaeghe was, I think, the Panthers' top guy. He had 12 points in 10 games, really exploded. So it'll be fun to see if he can end up being a playoff pool winner like he was for maybe some people last year. So then on the Bruins side, of course, in net, right? Like, Ullmark has had this insane season. I'm curious to know, because Bruins, though, have gone back and forth so much. I know that right now Swayman is, like, out with an illness, but I'm sure he'll be back at some point. it'll be interesting to see. Like, now will Boston finally just play Ullmark for the stretch because he's the starter? Or will they just continue doing what was so successful in the regular season? It'd be really fun to see. I see a few series like this where I could imagine the team just going back and forth with their goalies. Yeah, this is one. I don't know. Maybe Andy here knows the scuttlebutt, just like he did for the Panthers goalie situation. But yeah, I'll be definitely curious to see if Ullmark actually gets to play all the games.
Yeah, I mean, it feels to me like Boston has been in this rhythm all season long where they trade off and they feel pretty happy about it. So I'm curious to see how the Bruins coaching staff behaves with managing their crease now that, you know, like, do they think that they could go through four rounds with what, and they'd rather lean on one goalie, or would they rather keep alternating so both are fresh and if one gets hurt, the other's ready to go? And then back to Verhaeghe, Elon, he had like such an incredible season. And, you know, the neat part about Verhaeghe is that his 5-on-5 numbers did not change at all. And last year, actually, they did change for the better. Like, he shot more by a little bit at 5-on-5, and his expected goals rates actually went up to be like approaching elite territory in the league with some of that the most dangerous consistent scoring chances. Like, he was already high end, but he's passed the one expected goal per 60 mark this season for the first time in his career, and that's a notable barrier. Like, anyone over that 1.0 XG per 60 is somebody that you want to be very careful with and also trust to score on the chances they get. And then the other thing that Verhaeghe did this year, which was pretty amazing, is on the power play, I think, well, he took on just such a massive role. He went from taking 6 shots per hour to 20 shots per hour and 14 attempts per hour to 33 attempts per hour. And these were from dangerous, dangerous positions. Like, Carter Verhaeghe, going into this year, had 2 career playoff goals. This year, he had 7 playoff goals over 81 games, like, which still isn't like, oh, whoa, that's so impressive. But remember, he wasn't on the top power play that whole time. And he was just piling up extra shots on goal through the season, averaging 3.5 shots per game this year compared to 2 last season, 2.5 the season before, which was when he paced for 69 over 43 games. And we're like, oh, this is good. Carter Verhaeghe's on the map. Small step back last season. But I think the Panthers really like him as a trigger man, and he seems to be up for the role. So one of the tweets I got right this season, Elon, is early in the season, Verhaeghe started cold, and I just tweeted like, you gave up on Verhaeghe too soon. I think that's one of the things I got right this year, keeping the faith with Verhaeghe, even though he started cold.
Yeah, good call, Brian. And yeah, with Ullmark, I'll say this, though. If Ullmark ends up playing all the playoff games and does really well, don't let that trick you into thinking he'll play all the games next season as well. I'm sure they'll just go back to 50-50 regardless. But okay, let's move on to another series here. Let's do Carolina versus the Islanders. Maybe the series that I'm like least excited for in terms of watching, which isn't fair, right? But I don't know. I just think of them as both like defensive teams, and we'll see how it goes. Obviously, in Carolina, one of the only like East team I could think of that didn't like load up. They in fact kind of loaded down. Like, they lost Svechnikov to injury, which is like a huge part of the team that's gone. I guess they got Shane Gostisbehere in, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do, because they're such a favorite in terms of, like, I know like people are expecting them to be able to beat the Islanders pretty handily. Like, I've seen a lot of predictions of just a Carolina and 5 Carolina and whatever. Of course, on the other side, the Islanders do have Ilya Sorokin, which, just like Shesterkin over on the Rangers, like, I just would always be afraid to go against one of those goalies. But yeah, the Hurricanes are, you know, they're still coming in with a pretty deep lineup. Like, I'm seeing lines for the, you know, the last game, like Aho, Teravainen, Jarvis, Natchez, Kotkaniemi, and Nason, and then, you know, a pretty okay bottom six with like your Stalls and whoever. But yeah, Brian, I guess like the one player maybe I'll ask you about here, aside from the team in general and how badly you think they're affected by losing Svechnikov, is like Teuvo Teravainen is someone I'm still watching out for. I know like I should have given up on him a lot earlier in the regular season. He did have a good playoffs last year. I just don't get like what happened to Teravainen. I know at some point we talked about it and it was like he lost his power play, but he was even getting power play time and he still just wasn't really able to bounce back to being the guy that he's been for like so many years. Last year's playoffs, Teravainen had 11 points in 14 games. So I don't know if he's just saving it for the playoffs again next year. Probably not, but I don't know. I'd still be tempted to take him with the last pick. I still have one forward pick left to go in the Keeping Carlson playoff pool. Do you think I'd be wasting it to throw it at Teuvo?
Teuvo's in my queue also for my final pick. And I actually, I'm having a hard time figuring out where his power play production went, because his shooting percentage is the same. He's taken fewer shots, so that could impact. But like, it doesn't seem like to the extent that he should have lost basically half his scoring per 60 minutes. I know that while he was on the ice on the power play, the Canes shot under 10%. And maybe that's the problem. When digging into how the Canes were different with and without Svechnikov, I did find this nugget that their power play has really, really been struggling without Svechnikov. Starting at 5-on-5, though, for a sec, like, they have the same underlying numbers with and without Svechnikov, but since Svechnikov has been injured, they're shooting 1 percentage point less, 7% versus 8% at 5-on-5. They're also getting 899 goaltending at 5-on-5 versus the 918 they were getting before. So if things look bad after Svechnikov, I think the goaltending is probably one of the bigger reasons why, and hopefully that stabilizes. But on the power play, going back to Teräväinen, since Svechnikov has been out, they have lost a full expected goal per 60 minutes, and I think that could be attributed to losing Svechnikov. But what isn't attributable to Svechnikov is that they were shooting 14% with him in the lineup on the power play. Without him, they were shooting under 8%, which is, if you're keeping track, that's worse than they were shooting at 5-on-5 for the first 60 games of the season. That's not normal for a team, especially when it's for any team, even a team that's not talented, to be shooting worse at 5-on-5 or worse on the power play than they were at 5-on-5. So I think that's hurt them. And I think with Teuvo Teräväinen, when he finally did get up to the top power play, I think things were still going like reasonably well. The expected goals numbers are still good. They're not as good as they were with Svechnikov, but still good for Carolina with the man advantage. But they just were, I think, snake bitten. And I think that's it. So if you're looking for Teuvo Teräväinen to perform, as I've said all season, you're looking for him to perform on the power play. And it's I was going to say we can hope he's back there, but the last five games of the season, he was not. Like, he was seeing a less than 50% share of Carolina's power play time. It's been like that's since he returned from a short spell on the shelf.
Yeah, we have a retweet here. Actually, they had a practice today, and Teräväinen's still on PP2. So it's Aho, Jarvis, Natchez, and of course, Stefan Nason, who's become a PP1 guy all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then Brent Burns.
Forget
Teräväinen. I shouldn't have even brought him up.
I think that's it. If he's not on the top power play, which he isn't, forget him. And I think the reason he struggled, even while on the top power play, I don't think is his fault. But him not being on the top power play might also not be his fault. But he's not worth your time.
Yeah, he's still on the top line. But yeah, anyways, but I'm also scared of Sorokin. So I'm passing on, all Carolina Hurricanes.
Even top line Teräväinen at 5-on-5 is not worth your while.
Mm-hmm. I guess another guy I'm watching on Carolina is Gostisbehere, another guy playing for a new contract. And he, we'll see. I know he's like mainly considered a power play specialist. I have him actually in my dynasty league. I traded for him as a rental and he did not end up doing what I thought. I got him back when he was on Arizona and he was looking really good. And this is probably like the worst case scenario for him fantasy wise, going to Carolina and not playing many minutes. We'll see how he does in the playoffs. Over on the Islanders side, Brian, I think the main story here is, of course, Matt Barzal is back. Holy cow. I don't know if this was a Kucherov situation. I guess it wasn't. They had the cap space, but I guess they were resting him for when the games mattered. Though I guess the games mattered a lot considering they were fighting for the playoffs. I don't even know what I'm saying. All I'm saying is Barzal is back. I think that makes a huge difference for him and also for Bo Horvat, who slowed down a bit, when Barzal got hurt. But if you recall, they were doing really well together. I think that Barzal being back makes him and Bo Horvat pretty decent sleepers for playoff pools, because I'll bet you they're going to fall farther than they would have if they were just playing well all season. And if Barzal hadn't gotten hurt, then as a deep sleeper, the guy on the line with them, Anders Lee, good spot with two star players. I know he ended the season super cold, but almost how much do we care about that data if it wasn't with Matt Barzal, such a dynamic player? I feel like that just changes the whole complexion of the line, of the power play, everything. So forget about Teräväinen. Maybe, I know the people that are in my draft, including Andy, are in the chat right now, but I'm looking at maybe Anders Lee with my last forward pick if he's still around, but now he probably won't be.
Well, Elon, the last time we talked about Anders Lee, I was giving up on him and saying, I'm worried. He hasn't been successful for a long time. I don't see anything that is super exciting or interesting to me in his numbers. Maybe he's just not the guy that I thought he could be. Playing with Horvat or Barzal, though, Elon, is a bit of a game changer. Like if Hudson Fashing or Kyle Palmieri or Pierre Engvall, like if any of those guys, or if Matt Martin was playing up on the top line with Horvat and Barzal, I'd be interested. And knowing that Andersley has done it before, even though I'm kind of down on him at the moment, I think that's a nice little sleeper pick, Elon. I would prefer him to Teravainen, especially because he is lining up on the top power play. So that's what I like about Andersley. Elsewhere on the aisles, I don't know that there's a whole lot to like, except here's the thing. Carolina, as I mentioned when talking about Svechnikov, has been bad defensively lately, or at least in the crease. They have an 891 team save percentage, and that goes back a month. So that's not great. 55 goals against over their last 19 games, which is almost 3 goals against per game, which is very un-Canes-like. And it's not like the Islanders have zero offense. So there is a chance that they're able, like if the Canes don't get their goaltending together and Sorokin is Ilya Sorokin, then this could easily be an upset in the making. So that's something I'm watching for. And if it is, especially if you're drafting in like a playoffs long pool, then you might be able to find some value. Like Elon, you said at the start, all these matchups look really good and really safe. And honestly, in my bracket, I have the Canes facing the Leafs in the conference finals, and I'm not sure yet. I think I'm leaning Canes over Leafs if that happens. But again, that's all assuming their goaltending returns to normal. And if it doesn't, then you might find some value in Islanders players.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's the top line, which I'm interested in. Like, again, I'm really high on Barzal and Horvat together. So maybe I'm wrong, but I just feel like that's magic right there. And then obviously we've got Brock Nelson, right? Who does well no matter who he's playing with at even strength generally, and he's good on the power play. So yeah, definitely some good guys you can get over. I mean, if you were in a super deep pool, you can look at like a Palmieri or an Engvall. I might stop at that point. But anyway, yeah, the Islanders, I agree with you. I think that they have a really good chance to be one of the teams that pulls up. Someone's going to get an upset, right? In the first round of the playoffs, like some wild card team is going to get through, I'd imagine, and I think the Islanders are a pretty good bet.
Yeah, you would think. It's tough, though. Like, I think I did the same thing last year. I went with the favorite in every single matchup in my bracket, even though it is so close. But because it's so close, it's like, why not go with the favorite? Who do you think? Okay, let's just pause.
Let's do predictions.
Do you think the Islanders are the most likely underdog to get out of the first round?
Yeah, I think that's... I'm looking through, and I think so, yeah.
Okay, I would say... my top three, I'm working through this live. Rangers, Wild, and Kings are the three that
I don't count second versus third seed like as like underdogs. You know, I'm talking like first versus wild card here, like real underdogs.
Okay, so it's Boston, Florida, Carolina, Islanders, Colorado, Seattle, and Vegas, Winnipeg. Okay, like I'll, you know what? I'll give a for the same reason that the Islanders could beat the Canes, I could go Winnipeg. Like, Hellebuck can be Sorokin.
Sure.
I just don't know if the rest of the lineup can be the Isles as much on Winnipeg as the Isles can. So, okay, Elon, good take.
Most likely
four seed to advance. I will join you with the Islanders.
Oh, whatever. I mean, good take or bad take. We'll find out in a couple weeks. We'll come back and be like, I'm sorry, everybody. That was a bad take. Let me now give you my predictions for round two. But okay, let's do another East Conference matchup, the Rangers and the Devils. I think this is like such a fun matchup. I'm so excited for it. Two teams that loaded up. The Devils obviously got Timo Meier. The Rangers got Kane and Tarasenko. We've got just like stacked top sixes, like high scoring teams. Of course, one big difference is that one team has Igor Shesterkin and then one team has Vitek Vanacek, who obviously is not the same. I'm very interested to see if Vanacek will be able to hold up. I think like the Devils are going to need goaltending. Like I think in the playoffs, generally, you think that like it's an adage for a reason, right? Like goaltending kind of carries you for a lot of it. And Igor Shesterkin was amazing in the playoffs last year. He had a 929 save percentage in the 20 games he played. He also was so strong to end the year. 9 quality starts in the last 10 games for Shesterkin most recently. So he's like really on it right now. Also, by the way, another person who had amazing playoffs last year, Adam Fox. So that's, you know, maybe that's not surprising. He carried that over into a great regular season as well. But like, there's a reason why I was excited to grab him. I didn't in my KKPP. I was going to, and I got sniped. But yeah, okay. But here's the main storyline, actually, that I'm the most interested to get your take on now and then to actually see what's going to happen. Timo Meier, right? So he was having a great season with San Jose, almost point per game. He goes to the Devils. didn't go so well. Like, in terms of, like, people banking on him for their fantasy playoffs, only 14 points in 21 games. Obviously, the Devils don't care. They have him for the playoffs. Well, they have him for this matchup first, and I'm curious to see how he'll do. I wouldn't be surprised. He's, like, top line, top power play. You know, he's getting all the deployment he'll need. Do you think that there was something wrong with him? Is it just, like, bad variance? Like, are you expecting Meyer to go back to what he was like for most of the season when we hit the playoffs next week?
Yeah, I'm expecting Meyer doesn't really miss a beat here. Like, nothing in his underlying numbers has really changed, except maybe on the power play, he's getting fewer shots through to the net. But that's actually kind of been covered up because he's been shooting 28.5% on the power play in New Jersey versus 22% in Seattle. Both would be career high marks. So actually, you wonder if there's a little regression due there. But at 5-on-5, I think I see the clear issue with Meyer because everything else, again, looks just dandy. But his points participation was at 40%, which is what you would expect from, like, a decent top pairing defenseman, like almost like a high end top pairing offensive defenseman. 40%. That's not what you'd expect from a forward. For comparison, Meyer was participating on 70% of the goals scored while he was on the ice while in San Jose. And over the years, he's basically been between 70 and 90% participating on all goals scored while he's on the ice. So honestly, I think, and you know, you could say, oh, well, he's on a new team. Maybe he's not that involved in the offense. I disagree. This is not, again, this is the 40% points participation. That's not a forward number, period. If Timo Meyer was going to be a lesser participant, his number would still be 60% or higher. So I think, honestly, that's where all of Timo Meyer's points went. They were just lost because he just happened to not get a point on as many of the goals scored while he was on the ice as he has been his entire career. And so I think that makes him actually a really great value pick in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, he fell pretty far in my KKPP. I did get sniped on him as well, but I think he'll do well. And by the way, I guess another thing that's, like, kind of boring to say, but I'm excited to see what Jack Hughes is going to do. Like, I could imagine if anyone's going to break Shesterkin, it'll be Hughes. And I just would love to see him just totally go off. And with his brother also in the lineup now, Luke Hughes, that'll be a lot of fun to see how that goes. So I those are the games I think I might want to watch the most, at least of the series we've talked about so far. Let's go to the next East series. Here's a big one, obviously, where I live, Toronto versus Tampa. We're doing it again. And this year, it's going to be different. That's what I hear from Leafs fans. And, like, a lot of the people making their predictions, like, on The Athletic, I looked, and, like, more people are predicting Toronto to win than Tampa. And it's like, I get why they're predicting that, but I just, like, can't. Like, I made my bracket, and I was like, I'm not picking Toronto. It's just too, like, just in my brain. It's hard to imagine that happening. But this could be their year. Like, I think they did a good job. They got all those defensemen. They could get, like, a 3D injuries and still roster an NHL competent, like, decor. They got Ryan O'Reilly, who had a strong, well, he got injured, but then he had that strong end, and he's on the top power play, by the way. So I guess that's also, by the way, for playoff pools. Actually, let's start there, Brian. So Ryan O'Reilly on the top power play over Nylander, at least in the last game to end the season. Do you think O'Reilly is someone that will be able to carry this over? He also had a good playoffs last year. He was point per game in his short run in the playoffs. So Ryan O'Reilly obviously also won the Conn Smythe just a few years ago. So this is his time.
Yeah, O'Reilly is someone who has a track record of performing in the playoffs. And while, you know, it's playoffs are always a small sample and you don't want to buy into a narrative that a guy is a good playoff performer, the style of play does change in the playoffs, and some guys do excel at that. And I would count Ryan O'Reilly as someone that I kind of expect to up his game, especially after such a disappointing regular season. But after being out, after a really great start with Toronto, missing so much time to injury, coming back and basically picking up where he left off and still playing in the top six in Toronto, which has two top lines, basically, and this power play one deployment, I like O'Reilly. I actually, Elon, I got him really late in my KKPP. I got him early in the eighth round. He's my second last forward, and I'm thrilled to have him there. Like, I had the other guys I had on the board. Well, I guess if anyone in my league is listening live, you can take him if you want. I had JT Compher, Jonathan Marchessault, Ryan Hartman as the other guys. Hartman and Marchessault were taken almost immediately after. Compher's still out there. But Ryan O'Reilly, to me, stands out amongst that group and, like, maybe the 7 or 8 forwards who were taken before.
No, I'm with you. I mean, okay, looking at the practice lines today, so going into game one, O'Reilly, Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Morgan Riley, top power play, good company. The even strength line combinations, O'Reilly with Nylander and Tavares. Like, I mean, he's in a great spot. He's a good player. Yeah. To get him that late is a good deal.
And, you know, we said at the start of the show, do not try and predict series lengths. But I'm going to predict a series length. Like, if there's a series most likely to go to seven games, I think it's this one.
Yeah. Well, just knowing the Leafs' track record, yeah, they'll go up like 3-1 or something. And then yeah. It'll all come
and they'll drop
down.
Their customary 2. I think this is the year they actually make it through.
Of course.
Though, which is even better.
This is the year.
This is the year. I have them going to the Cup Final, basically.
Yeah, and Nylander, by the way, like, you might be nervous because he's not on the top power play, but he ended the season super strong, 5 points in his last 4 games, ended the season with 87 points, a career year. And speaking of, like, playoff performers, Nylander was the Leafs' best guy last year, 7 points in 7 games. He also had 8 points in the 7 games the year before in the first round 7-game series. So, like, Nylander always brings it. So I almost feel like if anyone wants to be nervous about him because he's not on the top power play, I'm not worried. I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, he's going to be good enough at 5-on-5, and I'm just, like, scrolling through his Frozen Tools game log to check his, like, share of power play time. I'm still scrolling. He was on the top unit virtually every game this year, so it would be an interesting turn of events if suddenly he was off the top line, the top power play, where he's put up 59 power play points over the last 2 seasons from his spot on the top unit. So I don't see why he wouldn't be up there, which is a reason to be maybe a little cooler on O'Reilly or maybe Morgan Riley. I'm not sure how Nylander gets up there. It's probably bumping Ryan O'Reilly, which I think I'm just trying to deny since I've now drafted him.
I mean, whatever. Power play's not everything. There's still lots of goals that can be scored. Okay, let's look on the Tampa side. Did anyone notice that Braden Point was having a 50-goal season until he did it? Like, I knew he was having a good year,
yeah.
But, like, out of nowhere, like, just, like, a huge year. Braden Point, he's a shooting percent. He's very good at putting pucks on net and getting them to go behind the goalie without even having to take that many shots.
Wow, what a great way to describe scoring in hockey. Yeah, this year he did it. I mean, we talked about... We did. I think, Elon, the last time you brought up Braden Point, it was like, has anyone realized that he has 30 goals or 40 goals or whatever it was at the time? But this year, he is shooting basically the same shooting percentage as he had in that 95-point pace season back in 18-19, where the smoke was that, oh, like, hey, this is where he's going to stay. And we're like, no, he shot 40% on the power play. Expect him to calm down a bit. And then he did. But now that he's Braden Point is back up here, and his 5-on-5 shooting percentage is high. It's not like crazy high, though, compared to what we'd normally expect from him. And on the power play, it's up to 30%, which is about twice as high as it's been the last 2 seasons. So some extra goals there for Braden Point. And I'm not thinking now that he's done this twice in the last 5 seasons that Braden Point is going to do this again next year. But he's, like, legitimately good. And I don't know if you remember, you know, it was a huge blow for the Lightning when he was hurt. Was it mid-series or late series? Or the last game of the season. I can't remember. He missed a chunk of the playoff series last year. And it's a huge boost to the Lightning that he's actually going to be able to be a full participant this time around.
Yeah. And another guy I wanted to bring up here as maybe someone to watch, a pending UFA. Another guy. I like watching the guys playing for money, not because, like, I think it's, like, so fantasy relevant. Like, we'll find out in the summer and we'll discuss. But just, like, you know, this is their last chance to try to prove that they're worth it. Alex Killorn. He had a career year this year. And I feel like midway through the season, we were like, Alex Killorn is hot and he's in a good spot. And we were like, yeah, but Killorn does this all the time. He always cools off. But this year, like, he didn't. Like, he ended the year super strong, like 31 points in his final 35 games to end the year with 65 points, which is his highest ever. So good for Killorn. And now we'll go into the playoffs. And I think he's someone I would definitely grab in KKPP. I saw that he got taken in my div. I was planning on grabbing him with my last pick, but I guess other people are pretty savvy themselves. Yeah, he's looking pretty good. And it seems like he's locked in his top power play spot along with all those studs in, of course, Stamkos, Kucherov, and Point. And then a defenseman who might be Sergachev, might be Hedman. I'm not sure. I'll bet you it'll change a bunch of times. But Hedman definitely fell the furthest I've ever seen him fall in a playoff pool. Like, he just got taken in my KKPP draft, like, in the 7th round, I think. Like, unheard of, right, for Victor Hedman. And I wouldn't be surprised if he makes people regret passing on him because he's also, like, a great playoff performer. But yeah, Sergachev seems to have taken over. But power play's not everything. But yeah, Killorn, Sergachev, Hedman will all be interesting to watch as well.
Yeah, Killorn for sure. But the last time you brought him up too, I think I pointed out, like, his shooting percentage is high this season. He's shooting 20% at 5-on-5, which he has done one time before, And that season, he was also very valuable in fantasy. So I don't know that I expect it to last, especially because he really boosted his totals. Killorn, like, finished the season so strong. He had 6 goals in his last 8 games, but those came on 14 shots. So again, like, Killorn's a guy who doesn't need a whole lot of tries to get a puck in the net. And he is also the sort of player that Tampa likes to rely on come playoff time. So we'll see exactly what he's able to accomplish. But Elon, I do like him as a late round flyer, especially because if I'm betting on one series going long, I think it's this one.
Yeah, like you said, yeah, very good point. Okay, and then let's
also
do
I don't know if I can drop like a hot take contrary to that, but I could also see this over in 4.
Okay.
Like Toronto.
You spent the whole time saying the one series you're so sure is going to go 7 is this one. But also, I could see it going 4.
I feel like it's Toronto in 4 or it goes 7.
And Tampa in 7?
How about that? I think Toronto. I think Toronto's going to take
Brian's
it. Even in 6.
Right.
It's Toronto in 4, 6, or 7. You heard it first from me, but not in 5.
If it goes 5, Tampa wins. Got it.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Look, Brian, I love your optimism. Hey, I had a really fun time at a friend's house for Game 7 of the last year's series.
I've heard about this fun time so many times from you, and I know you just want another fun time.
I'm
going to
get one. We're probably going to have one fun time. It would be fun to do it like all throughout the... Imagine like a whole playoffs.
You know, if you move to Tampa, you could have so many fun times.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, so finally in the East, we've got the Devils and the Rangers. Oh, wait, we already talked about them. Oh, we're done the East. Okay, great. We can move on to the West then. All right, and with that, let's move on to the Western Conference, Brian. And let's go to our defending Stanley Cup champion, Colorado Avalanche, who are a little different this year, of course. The main differences are that they do not have Gabriel Landeskog, who's announced that he's going to be out for the playoffs. And obviously another big piece last year was Nazem Kadri, who's not around. Who do they have instead? They have Evan Rodriguez. So yeah, it's obviously like this team has taken some hits, as what happens when you win a cup, you know, in the cap era. But do you think it's like, is this like such a big hit that now Colorado isn't as scary? Because last year they were so scary, right? They were like dominant, like pretty much all throughout the playoffs. Cale Makar was insane. But we should mention Cale Makar hopeful for game one. It seems like it's likely he'll play, but obviously not the greatest news if you're an Avs fan that, you know, he's had all this injury concern like leading into the playoffs. So I'm just curious, like on the scale of like terrified to, you know, they're just like one of these other teams we've already talked about. Like, is Colorado a team that you think like should strike fear in people's hearts? Or are they more of just like they're one of many teams that could make it out of the West?
No, they should still strike fear in people's hearts. I love the way like that sounds so dramatic. But yeah, no, they're still amazing. And what Colorado has done this season is impressive because they're all situations expected goals rates as a team stayed pretty much steady over last year. And last year at 5-on-5, they were actually like kind of a like just above middle of the pack. And this year they were in a similar spot, like maybe just a little lower, like more in the middle of the pack, maybe even closer to the bottom. But their power play is still lethal and they're still such a great team at drawing penalties. So I still don't see any, like, yes, they are missing Landeskog and they're missing Kadri, but I still don't see like any glaring weaknesses. I guess their bottom six appears to be a bit of a weakness. Like the depth isn't there.
I mean, even the second line, right? Like the lines in their last game, they had McKinnon, yeah, Rantanen, and Nichushkin. Then line two was like Compher, Lekkonen, and Evan Rodriguez, which is like, yeah, you know, not terrible, but it's not
right.
Like
it's
scary.
Perfectly serviceable. Like, and maybe it's not scary. And I think it's a line that can hold steady and then surprise. And then I think for Colorado, they just have to hope that their bottom six can hold the fort when they're on the line, when they're on the ice, and just basically like giving everybody else a rest. Like that's going to be the moment for the Kraken to strike. And the Kraken have such a like a steady, consistent lineup through and through that, you know, any of their lines can appear to be their best line, their top line at any given moment. So the third line will be exposed. Just by default, it doesn't even necessarily need to take a whole lot of line matching. So if I'm looking for a way for Seattle to get through, I guess that's it. But at the same time, Colorado is like super well coached, and their defense, like Kadri's a fantastic defensive centerman, and so Landeskog too, not centerman, but it's again held reasonably steady from year to year, from last year's star-studded or more star-studded lineup to this year's slightly less star-studded lineup. So, Elon, I appreciate that you're trying to find these weak spots for Colorado, but I just don't know there's enough of them for the Kraken to take advantage of.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like that, I think that's the key point that you're saying, like, wait till the third line comes on. But regardless of what forward line is on, Colorado probably will still have like Girard and Taves or Byram and Makar. Like they're going to have some like really amazing defensemen out there who are like scary for offense and for defense. And we'll see what happens in net. Alexander Georgiev will be for the Avalanche, first year as a starter, looking pretty good, going against former Av Grubauer, who I believe was a Vezina finalist in his last year with Colorado. But Colorado, I guess, smartly decided to not spend big on him. They do fine with whoever their goal is, and it'll be fun. I'm sure Grubauer wants to prove to a lot of people that he's for real and worthy of his contract. It's going to be tough. You know, generally when I'm playing fantasy hockey, I try to avoid teams playing against Colorado, and now Grubauer is gonna have to play Colorado every single game, so it's gonna be very hard for him to prove that he's worth this contract against this team. But yeah, I'll be definitely curious to see how he does, and obviously this will give us some data for next year, right? Like if Grubauer totally flounders, then we go into next year wondering like, oh, maybe is Driedger gonna take the spot? I don't know, whatever. Well, like, or is like Anunin gonna come up from the minors because like clearly Grubauer couldn't do it? Or, you know, wait, I just mixed up my teams here. Anunin's on Colorado. Grubauer's on Seattle. Who would it be? I don't know, Joey Decord. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. I think that Grubauer has a lot to prove here. And then the other interesting thing over on Seattle is the power plays. We always come back to the power plays, right? And I saw in lines today, Vince Dunn was on the second power play unit while Justin Schultz was quarterbacking the top power play. I wonder if this even matters. Like if I'm doing my playoff pool, like I feel like I just want to still take Vince Dunn pretty high among defensemen because of, you know, what he did in the regular season. But like this isn't like an even power play, but at least in terms of the personnel, like I'm seeing Schultz with Beniers, Schwartz, McCann, and Eberle, like clearly the top forwards on the team. And then Dunn is with Tolvanen, who's been really good on the power play, but like Gourde, Bjorkstrand, and Wennberg. I don't know, maybe it is actually even and I just need to get with the times. Like, but yeah, do you think like Vince Dunn, like, are you more concerned to draft him in a playoff pool just because of this power play setup?
I guess so. I think Seattle is trying to split the power plays, which they've done a few times through the season. And maybe it sticks, maybe it doesn't. I think Vince Dunn, you know, will be in a good spot one way or the other. Like, is he in an okay spot or is he in a better than okay spot? And right now it's just okay. But it's a good, I'm glad you mentioned it, Elon, for the show, for everyone to take note of. I'm also glad you talked about Philip Grubauer a little bit, because he has quietly had a really great season at 5-on-5.
I thought you'd maybe say good.
No, at 5-on-5, he's playing almost 10 save points above his expected Fenwick save percentage.
Well, what do you know?
Yeah, like, and you know who else? You know who he's basically in a virtual tie with is Connor Hellebuck.
Okay, I was worried you were going to say Martin Jones, and I'd be like, forget this stat.
But
okay.
No, but also Sam Montembeau, so like, take what you will from that. But really, Grubauer is at the top of the table with a group of goalies who, like, I'm looking through the list. Gustafsson is new, so like maybe, but he also looked really good. Montembeau was really like the one who stands out. I was like, wait a second, if he can have a good number this way, does that invalidate the stat? But he's also been really good. So yeah, Grubauer on the whole has been doing really well. The only curious thing is that of this group, despite him playing so well, he's the only one who has a number of goals saved above average that's in the negative as a raw
total. Well,
because
Brian, you're only looking at 5-on-5. He's probably just been terrible shorthanded. And in the first minute of every game.
Well, that's where he really gets killed, as well as shorthanded, like, which has been like an ongoing thing for Grubauer. But he hasn't been as bad shorthanded, like, through the season as he started the season. He's 3.5 save points below his expected number. So there's hope for Philip Grubauer. And yeah, this would be, you know what? If Grubauer can steal one game in this series, I feel like that sets him up for a more successful season next year.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell me how he's doing at even strength all you want. I still need to see him put up a save percentage above 900, like total on the season, before I'm interested in him.
Well, Seattle's like Carolina also to play goalie for, right? Like you give up 2 or 3 goals a night, your save percentage is shot because you're just not seeing a whole lot more pucks to stop. It's basically Grubauer's fault that he... that I didn't win my division this season.
Sorry, Brian.
He gave up like 5 goals on 9 shots to Philly. I don't even remember. It was hard to watch.
Yeah, it's definitely Grubauer's fault that you were banking on a sub 900 goalie to win your division.
No, it was like ridiculously bad.
Fair. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Let's move on to the next series. It's
my fault. Well, we're going to have that episode soon, by the way. We'll put out the call on Twitter. But we want to know the reasons why you shouldn't have lost this season, even though you did.
When are we going to do it? Like the next episode? We're going to take a break next week. So next weekend. Okay, programming note for moving forward. Here's the plan that we've got currently. Next weekend, we're going to do a patron cast. We do a show once a month just for the patrons where we answer all the patrons' questions. And also, we got a bunch of feedback from our Keeping Carlson Alta Patron Fantasy League, the Cupful. We collected, like as we do every year, we put out a survey, an exit survey of what people thought about the league, what they think we should change for next year. And so we're going to go over some of that feedback and then also answer all the patrons' questions. That's next Sunday. So if you're going to be like, oh, I want to have an episode of Keeping Carlson next Sunday, $1, you become a patron, then you can get it. Okay, so that's going to happen, and we're gonna have a lot of fun with the patrons. Then the following week we'll come back for an episode. I imagine we'll talk about what happened in the first round of the playoffs, but that probably shouldn't take too long, right? So maybe we can do that episode, Brian, where we take everyone's reasons for why they lost their leagues and judge them. So I guess we'll decide. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that as coming up so soon? Or do we need to save it for the summer?
No. Save what? Save which one?
Save the why I lost.
The why I didn't deserve to lose? No, we should do that.
Okay. So it's coming up in 2 weeks.
Coming up in 2 weeks. So tweet us your stories written in the notes app, ideally. No, I'm kidding. Like, we need context. For if you're going to give us your stories, like there's got to be enough for us to judge and rate on. I'm sure you could whip up a whole beautiful narrative, but like try and keep it to like a reasonable number of words and characters. And we will rate and celebrate the team that definitely deserved to lose the least.
Okay.
Like the best loser.
We should have a prize. We should like order a pizza for whoever we decide is the winner.
We will. We're going to send a pizza to whoever least deserve to lose but still lost.
Yeah, unless it's like they're in like I don't know, Alaska or like Sweden or I don't know, somewhere
pizza
where it's
places
like
everywhere.
I mean, as long as it's not too hard for us to order the pizza,
we'll send you the equivalent of a pizza if we can't order it directly.
I don't know why I said Alaska. That's in America. That's probably like you could just use like whatever, skip the dishes, or that's probably just a Canada thing. What's the one the Americans use? Postmates, I think.
Yeah.
If that's there, then that'll be easy.
Those Americans with all their food delivery services.
Do they do Uber Eats? They must, right?
I think so. I don't know. We don't need to give these...
I'm not saying they're good or bad. We all know they exist. It's like, anytime I'm watching a movie with Dina and like someone is like, you know, whatever, eating cereal, drinking, like whatever, like, you know, just like, oh, product placement. But I feel like sometimes a movie just wants to have a person like in the world. Like, you know, it's like just because you mention, like sometimes it's not even positive or negative. You just see this... I don't know. I guess there probably is a lot of product placement that I'm not, but I like to think that sometimes directors just choose to like put a product in just because that says something about the character and not because they're like being paid.
Maybe, but I feel like it's also like, okay, well, they're going to be eating cereal. We want it to be real life cereal. Who wants it? Who wants to be the real life cereal?
I guess. I just feel
it's not like they're eating cereal just to get the product placement money.
But like, what if it's like a beer? I don't know. I just feel like a good movie's not going to have someone like drinking like whatever, like, Buff
it has
cola
to make sense.
Yeah.
What's Buff Cola?
Isn't that or Buff Beer? I don't know. I
Duff?
Are you talking about Duff?
If you liked this, there's more of it coming on the Patreon cast next week. For sure. Like, we're not off next week. We're just recording an episode exclusively for the patrons. $1 a month. KeepingCarlson.com/patron or Patreon.com/KeepingCarlson.
It becomes a lot less special because it'll be ad-free also, just like this one. So... But it's still special because it's bonuses for the patrons.
Yeah, it's exclusive. You can't hear it unless you support us.
Yeah, we used to be able to say it was our one with no ads. But now we're doing that. Anyway, what am I doing? Okay, let's keep going with the episode.
I don't know what you're doing.
We got three playoff series to go. So we got Dallas versus Minnesota next. So the first thing
I know the plural of series is series.
Series. I apologize. Thank you for the correction. We've got three to go. Three series to go. Dallas and Minnesota is where I want to go next. I think this one's going to be a lot of fun. I've been seeing a lot of people saying Dallas is like the clear favorite. I don't know. I don't see it. Like, I think they both look really good. In Minnesota, what scares me about them is like Kaprizov went down And then all of a sudden, Matt Boldy turned into like the biggest superstar in the league. He was like just destroying. He was doing so well. And now Kaprizov is back. And now it's like Minnesota has these two scary lines. Like they still, like, because they didn't like mix and match. It was like Kaprizov was playing with Hartman and Zuccarello, and then he got injured. It's not as if then Zuccarello and Hartman went with Boldy, right? Boldy was with Joel Eriksson Ek and Marcus Johansson, and that went really well. Now, I guess obviously the one problem with all of this is that Joel Eriksson Ek is injured, I believe. I should probably check for an update on that. I don't know why I didn't do that before the show, but maybe the chat or someone, when you're talking, Brian, I'll take a look. But assuming that they could have all those guys together, or even if not, whatever, you get Freddie Gaudreau up there instead of Joel Eriksson Ek. Obviously not as good, but I think Minnesota could be good. They've got Klingberg, you know, to take over the top power play, though there has been news that he didn't practice today and he might be injured. He's a lower body issue. So that, I guess, would also be an issue. Oh, I am seeing here, Joel Eriksson Ek skated today and will go to Dallas. So look at that. Also, Gustav Nyquist is on the team. I feel like a lot of people might forget that he was acquired at the deadline, but he was injured. He didn't play very much. But Nyquist did end up coming in. And you know what? He was really good. Like, he had 5 points in 3 games. So, you know, in his 3 games he played, he had 2 assists versus St. Louis, a goal versus Chicago, and then 2 assists versus Nashville. So all of a sudden, that gives the team some depth. I wonder if Nyquist is like a deep playoff. Anyways, not to say that I think that Minnesota's for sure going to win, because Dallas is also very scary. And the first thing I think about with Dallas is Jake Oettinger and his incredible playoffs last year, almost helping Dallas pull an upset. This year, now he comes in as the favorite. And it's thrown a lot at you, Brian. So I don't even know. You could just choose what you want to talk about here from this series of the names I've mentioned so far. I still have more things I want to talk about with this series, but I feel like I should stop talking.
This series, I actually have a really hard time getting a handle on. And I still do. Like you just said, I think, everything. Like I don't know how much more I can really add here.
All right, let me throw you a question then.
I think, okay, Nyquist is interesting. Like I like that you're bringing him up.
Jake Oettinger. Okay, let's talk about him. So he had a .919 save percentage this year. Last year in the playoffs, we cannot forget his incredible .954 save percentage in 7 games. Do we think that Oettinger? I think he still has room to grow. I feel like if we were to do Schmore goalies board for next year right now, we wouldn't have Oettinger in tier one, even though he's like going to be a volume goalie on a good team. Like, do you think he has the ability in these playoffs to convince us that he should be in tier one next year? Are you open to that?
I'm open to it. I don't think his numbers at 5-on-5 have been like strong enough yet. Like last year, he played basically above his expected number, not by much. This year, he played more, like six or seven points above save points above his expected save percentage, which is good. Like that's actually a quality season, but it's not up there with that group of goalies I just named when we were talking about Philip Grubauer. It's still a step behind. So yeah, I think Oettinger does have a little bit more to prove, and a great season here could help. But I don't think he's quite going to... The reason he could end up in tier two is because he's one of a dying breed of workhorse number one goalies, right? And it might be even more of a dying breed if Boston goes far with Allmark and Swayman sharing duties, or even if they're not sharing duties and everyone just watched them share duties all season long. Same thing if Toronto goes deep too. It's like, why do you need a workhorse number one if you're going to be able to survive and make it into the playoffs and then pick one and go deep with them?
But if anything, that would make Oettinger more viable, because maybe most teams won't do it and they will.
That's what I'm saying. Like I'm saying, one of a dying breed if everybody else follows suit. I don't think Dallas is about to go in that direction. It's like Winnipeg wouldn't either, right, with Hellebuck. I see them as like sort of analogous situations. So Oettinger has some room to gain here. Like if he can, that's how he would be a tier two goalie, Elon. And actually, I don't know if I can pretend that what he does in the playoffs is going to influence my thinking a whole lot, because he had such a great postseason last year. If he repeats that or doesn't, I don't think I'm changing my mind too much about Oettinger. Like for me, the interesting storyline is in Minnesota, right? Between Gustafsson and Fleury. You've got Fleury and Pete DeBoer, who, was the assumptive sword stabber of Fleury. Right when he was turning away from him, and then his agent posted the tweet. We all know the story by now. And Filip Gustavsson, who has been amongst the elite goalies at 5-on-5 this season, and I think that's going to be Dallas's biggest hurdle. Both teams have this hurdle of being against pretty strong goaltending, and I'm not sure either team has a glaring weakness. I think it's going to be a really, really fun series to watch. And again, I don't know. Like, everybody seems to be picking Dallas, but I kind of think it's even odds.
Yeah. I think if I could find someone who wants to give me good odds, I guess probably you could just do normal gambling. Like, I think if I could get decent odds on Minnesota, I'd take him, right? Like, I think it's close to a coin flip for me. Jason Robertson is also obviously fun to watch. Like, I don't know really what to say about him, but he came close to breaking a franchise record. I think he ended up with 108, six behind Bobby Smith's 114. So what an amazing year. Oh, yeah. Here's another thing, Brian, random thing.
Okay.
Depth players. So I brought up Nyquist on Minnesota. So Dallas also has a depth player coming back in Mason Marchment, who missed a chunk of the end of the season, but he was also good. 6 points in five games before he got hurt. So that's a fun battle to watch, Marchment versus Nyquist.
So fun. Yeah, I can't wait to see what... I mean, Marchment, he looks good. His underlying numbers have always looked good. He just hasn't been able to be regularly offensive, and I think it might be like a role thing for him too, but he does seem like the kind of player who could excel here. Do we know if Marcus Johansson is going to be in the lineup
yet? I believe yeah.
Okay, because like he has been incredible on the Wild, and I know we've mentioned this already, but if we're naming all the players on every team, then we should definitely mention Marcus Johansson, who did not cool down since coming to Minnesota. 18 points in 20 games as a member of the Wild. And no one saw this coming, right? Like, Marcus Johansson, even in his best days, has never been this productive. And I think, Elon, like, if you're looking for someone to have a coming out party in this series that's going to impact my feeling about them at the draft table, it's not Marcus Johansson, actually. It's going to be Matt Boldy. Like, just to see exactly how well he can do in, like, the playoff, like, when the stakes are high in playoff hockey, if he can really take his game to another level, like, if he shows up and has a huge postseason, I could see that bumping his draft stock by a couple rounds.
Okay, so next up, Brian, let's go to Vegas versus Winnipeg. Big story out of Vegas. This is like with the Islanders. All of a sudden, coming back from the dead, just like Matt Barzal, we've got Mark Stone. Who could play? I don't know. I got eliminated from the Cupful, big part due to his... I mean, got eliminated. I came in 13th place. But like a big reason why I started to fall was after Mark Stone got hurt. But yeah, he might be back. I saw him lining up with Stevenson and Amadio in the practice lines today. It looks like they were rolling, you know, keeping Barbashev up on the top line with Eichel and Marchessault, and then Stone with Stevenson and Amadio. So that's a huge... like. That's so huge for Vegas. Just, Brian, what's more huge, actually? Barzal returning to the Islanders or Stone returning to Vegas? Because I feel like if Stone is back, obviously it's a big if he's like 100%. Like, if he's actually Mark Stone, then I feel like that tilts the series. And I think Vegas is going to win going away.
Yeah, well, I think Mark Stone's health and Jack Eichel's ultimate performance and also whether goaltending can hold up are all going to determine. Like, I feel like it's Vegas's series to lose. That is the saying, right? That's like saying like they're supposed, like, I think they're going to win unless things go wrong for them. And like, unless they don't follow through on everything we expect should happen. Like, they do have the forward depth. They have the defense. The goaltending has been off the charts lately. Laurent Brossoit with a .946 save percentage and a 5-game winning streak heading in to the playoffs. Just 8 goals against in his last 5 games with a .946 save percentage. So Brossoit is hot. Can he stay hot? And he's playing his former team. This is how he looked. Remember that season when he was backing up Hellebuck? And every start he had was incredible. So we'll see if he's found his groove too. But yeah, I think Vegas just needs things to go as generally you'd expect. And Winnipeg needs Vegas to fall apart and Hellebuck to stand on his head. I could see this one going deep too, though. Like, I could see some back and forth happening. It's going to be another fun series to watch. Mark Stone would be a huge, huge benefit to Vegas. Also, Elon, if you don't mind me like going ahead and talking about the next player, have you noticed Chandler Stevenson's good again?
That's nice. Well, I mean, and it won't hurt that he's going to get Mark Stone back to play with. So, yeah, don't forget about him, I guess, in your playoff pools.
Yeah, back on the top power play unit. I mean, like, he wasn't off for very... like, he's been on the top unit for most of the season, but he has pointed a lot more often than not over his last 17 or 18 games. So, Chandler Stevenson, like, I was looking in the KKPP. He was already gone. I didn't even realize it, but I was like, Marchessault or Stevenson? and I was sort of trending, leaning first to Marshall Soto and then to Stevenson. And of course, Stevenson was gone. And then I drafted Ryan O'Reilly instead.
I mean, to be fair, like, that top power play was without Mark Stone. So it's possible that Stevenson will be gone. We'll have to wait and see once those lines come out with Stone in the lineup. Of course, I'm sure what you kind of brought it up, like, Connor Hellebuck will have to stand on his head. Believe it or not, the Vegas goalie, I assume Laurent Brossoit, is going to start game one. And why not? He did so well when he came back. 927 save percentage in his 11 games, 7 wins. So, you know, like, obviously I'm not saying Brossoit is Hellebuck. Wasn't Brossoit Hellebuck's backup, actually, for a while in Winnipeg?
Yeah, I have that right? I just mentioned it.
Oh, you did? Where was I?
Yeah. I said Brossoit is finally playing like the guy that season where he started like 10 times behind Hellebuck and killed them all.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, well, that's going to be really fun then. What a fun... I got to go re-listen to this podcast. Sounds like you said some interesting things. But, yeah, Brossoit is going to maybe make Vegas... I mean, or maybe he'll fall apart because, you know, he's never been a true starter, and I definitely don't have any faith in Jonathan Quick. So, I guess, yeah, Vegas is banking on Brossoit, or who knows, maybe Logan Thompson randomly comes back at some point. And then I guess the other news over in Winnipeg. So, Nikolai Ehlers, day-to-day, we'll see if he plays. Mark Scheifele, kind of like Braden Point, just kind of... I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but just like had an insane goal scoring season, 40 plus goals for Mark Scheifele. So yeah, obviously for Winnipeg to win, it'll help for, yeah, to have Ehlers back and to have Scheifele continue that awesome scoring touch that he had this year.
Yeah, as I said, I loaded up on Jets thinking that maybe Vegas had a bit of a weak spot. And I think for round one, it's not a bad bet. And if you are picking a team to go deep into the playoffs with, or at least pass the first round into the playoffs with, when no one at your draft table is taking them and you happen to see Dubois and Scheifele and Morrissey all sitting there, I think that's and Ehlers, like, that's not a bad team to start collecting from.
Yeah, and actually also it's interesting what's going on in Vegas's D, right? Like, we talked about Boston and Lindholm versus McAvoy and who's going to be on the top power play. Like, Theodore and Petrangelo both have kind of gone back and forth over their tenure in Vegas. And, like, Petrangelo just ended the year so strong. I'm sure Petrangelo's getting taken in the majority of leagues first in playoff pools just because of the amazing season he's had. But of course, going into the season, I think most people were drafting Shea Theodore. But Petrangelo, okay, we got to, like, put the bow on his season. 54 points in 73 games for a 61-point pace. That's the same pace he had in his final season with St. Louis that probably helped earn him this awesome contract he has now on Vegas. So he finally got up to those levels and he helped Vegas get back into the playoffs. Obviously, like, a huge part of this team, plays huge minutes. But Shea Theodore, he missed a lot of time with injury, so we didn't see him at the end of the year. But when he was healthy, he actually ended really strong himself. So I think that'll be fun to watch just in terms of, like, I probably won't be too predictive for next year just because I'd imagine they'll still continue to, like, split. I think Vegas likes to go with two power plays anyways if they have the personnel to do so. But yeah, for the playoffs, Brian, who would you take? Is it like Petrangelo running away? Or if you're choosing for this playoff pool, would you consider taking Theodore first?
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty close. It's really funny to see them both have a 61, or it's really amazing. Funny isn't the right word, to see both Theodore and Petrangelo have a 61-point pace despite having not power play 1 point totals, but still being able, like, and sometimes it's like, oh, well, they're not, they scored too many points for power play 2 deployment. It's like, no, they all, like, Theodore had 9 power play points over 55 games. Petrangelo had 14 power play points over 73 games. Both make sense given their deployment. And so their 5-on-5 scoring was fantastic. For Petrangelo, I think that came from a 50% points participation rate, which, you know, it hasn't been up there since 17-18 with when he was still back with the St. Louis Blues. And that was a big 60-point season for Petrangelo also. And then his next 60-point season came because of a big power play role. Big power play role and success for the Blues. Elon, if I'm picking between Petrangelo and Theodore, I think I'd like them both more than Vince Dunn, if that situates them at all. And I would say that they are both probably in the same neighborhood. Theodore, I have a bit of an emotional attachment to. He was good for me on my Cupful team this year. So I think I'd lean him, but that might just be those rose-colored glasses, a personal bias.
Yeah, and, like, even though I did say at the top of the show that I think all the series is are like interesting and I don't think any of them are like huge blowouts, probably the most likely blowout to me is that Colorado and Seattle. So Vince Dunn, I could see being out in four games. But I think that this, yeah, I agree with you that I think that Theodore and Pietrangelo get a few more games than the Seattle guys. By the way, Brian, when I missed your Hellebuck and Brossoit talk, it's because I got a message from my wife, Dina, who's playing in the KKPP this year. She took a team and she was actually messaging me, asking me who she should pick. I don't know if she ended up picking yet, but because I was sort of going back and forth with her a little bit while you were talking, which was very rude of me and I apologize. But, you know, you got to help your wife if she's messaging you.
That's okay. I've been doing the same with Josie, actually, while you've been talking now, except maybe I'm better at listening while I do it. What was Dina's?
Oh, yeah. So who should I have said? She was deciding on her 7th round pick, Killorn, yeah. Hagel, Eberle, or Joel Eriksson Ek. But Joel Eriksson Ek, of course, is like injured, but right. I found a tweet. That's what I was like looking up that really like probably caught me off guard and made me miss something that you were saying. So I was looking for tweets. But according to Michael Russo, so normally Minnesota Wild injured players have to skate with Andy Ness, then get promoted to practice. But Evenson said that if Eriksson Ek and Docs give him the green light, he'll be in their lineup even without a practice. So we're talking about him potentially being in the lineup as long as he gets a green light, which sounds to me like there's a decent chance he'll play, which means I would definitely take him, because if he's playing with Boldy and on the top power play, that's better than those other three guys.
Yeah, of that group. I agree. Like Hagel, like those other guys are all okay, but I don't think they're at X level. And like that makes a big difference in the Minnesota-Dallas series too. I have less faith in Minnesota doing well without Eriksson Ek. He's such a big, big important player. My I was trying to like look through the like Josie she's in the 7th round, doesn't have any defense yet. And I was like asking her to show me the list, like, okay, is it worth it now? And I don't think so. So I'm like, who are the top forwards? So she had Reinhardt and Boldy were like the two that jumped out at me from her available list in the 7th round. And I was like, go get Boldy. Yeah. Like, those were the two that I picked out from the group. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd go Boldy and then like I would kick D again and go Boldy. Actually, except that must be her last forward. 2D and a team goalies remain.
Ah, so disappointing have like all two good players. Sam Reinhardt, I know people are worried about because he's like been practicing on the third line, but he ended the season so strong. Just to go back to like the first series that we talked about, like I'm not too worried about Sam Reinhardt for this playoff pool. Like, and also the lines could end up getting shaken up, and like Florida's obviously gonna have to like mix and match and figure things out to go against this powerhouse Boston team. But Reinhardt's gonna get a lot of power play time, and he's gonna get a lot of time. No matter what line he's on, he's gonna play a lot, and he's really good.
Yeah. My concern for Reinhardt is the same as my concern for any Panthers player, which is that like it could be a short, frustrating series. Like I feel like Matthew Tkachuk is the one guy that I'm like, he's gonna be fine no matter what. And like maybe he'll still only play 4 or 5 games, but like he'll be fine. The other guys, I just don't know. But Reinhardt's finished the season so strong, including an 8-shot game against Washington, the 3rd last outing of the year, seeing over 90% of the power play time over the last couple games too. So I'm with you, Elon. Don't be down on Sam Reinhardt. I think he's closer to the 86-point player he was last year than the 61-point player he was the year before.
Mm-hmm. I think I might still take Boldy though if I'm comparing them. But
oh, me too.
Yeah,
she got Boldy. It's very exciting.
I also think the Panthers are going to do okay. I don't think they're going to win the series necessarily. I don't think it's going to be such a quick series.
How many wins?
Six game series.
Huh. I think their goaltending is going to let them down.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. Last series to talk about, Brian. Edmonton versus the Kings. I said on the last show that Edmonton is my Cup winner pick. So we'll see if they let me down or not. But I just feel like the one thing that's going to stand in Edmonton's way, this is the thing I'm most concerned about, is will Connor McDavid actually be allowed to play his game? Or will LA just be able to maul him all series, no penalties, because apparently refs have decided that Connor McDavid, you're allowed to do anything you want to him in the playoffs, which is like, I'm sure, great for the league, right? That Connor McDavid should... Anyway, that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping McDavid is, you know, properly reffed, you know, and like if people do illegal things to him, they get penalties for it. If that happens, then I think Edmonton can go very far because they finally have some missing pieces that they haven't had in the past, right? They have good defense. They have Matthias Ekholm now, someone who could eat some minutes. They have Stuart Skinner, who is an actually really good goalie, it seems. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what Edmonton can do. But of course, LA is not going to be a cakewalk. They've had such a great year ever since they flipped up their goaltending. And Brian, actually, that's going to be an interesting question. Another series where I'm not sure do we even know who the starter is yet between Korpisalo and Copley? Like, I could really just see it going back and forth, or like maybe they'll pick one. Like, Korpisalo did so well since coming over to LA, but like Copley basically saved their season after the terribleness that was Peterson and Jonathan Quick. So yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in that there. So where do you want to start there, Brian, with the LA goalies, and then we'll talk to some of the skaters?
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. It's either nice or not for the Kings to have two guys who, like, you're just not 100% sure who your best option is, but they've both been good. If you want the guy who's been the best lately, that's Jonas Korpisalo. Since coming to LA, holy cow, he has been a rock for the Kings, a rock and rock star. 921 save percentage as a member of the LA Kings, 73% quality starts. And Elon, this season has been like no other for Korpisalo. Like, I'm not sure, you know, I'm waiting for the offseason article about like a goalie coach like that changed his game or something. 65% quality start percentage for Korpisalo this season. The first 3 months of which you were like, Brian, maybe the first 6 months, Brian, can we buy in? Like, will you buy in on Korpisalo? And I was like, no, Elon, I will not. Because up until this season, in 7 years in the league, in any season where he saw like reasonable action, he had not been above a 40% quality start percentage, save for one season. And that's not good. That's not a way to be a goalie. In fact, last season, Korpisalo's at fewer than 30% quality starts. And he started 17 games and had 6 really bad starts, too. That's more than he had quality starts. 6 really bad starts to 5 quality starts. It's not a good way to go. But this season, yeah, just amazing. Very good in Columbus. Really good in LA. And he has outplayed Phoenix Copley. I mean, I know like there have been like game by game fluctuations, but he has been the better goalie between the two. So if I were making the choice, I would go Korpisalo. He's also been better on the penalty kill. Copley has really struggled lately on the penalty kill, but that's also in a small sample, so I don't know we should read too much into it. But LA, it's going to be interesting because they're not going to have a whole lot of time to figure things out. Like, you don't have time when you are like playing against Edmonton to adjust on the fly, because you will just be obliterated. And actually, Elon, I don't know if this is the hottest series take I'm going to drop on this episode, but I think this is an Oilers in 4. I think they're going to steamroll the Kings, even though the Kings are solid, right? They have they have Kopitar and Deneau, two of the top shutdown centermen in the league, and that's what you need when you're going up McDavid and Draisaitl. Like, that's a great match for them. Their defense is strong, and their goaltending has been good too lately. But I just think Edmonton is rolling and is going to be too much. And like, the difference is, as you said, Elon, Edmonton has these pieces that they haven't had before. Do you know how long it's been, Elon, since Edmonton gave up more than 2 goals in a game?
Oh, I don't know. What?
It's been 2 weeks, 7 wow. games. 0 their goals against from March 30th onward, 0-0, 1-1, 1-1. And then how dare they give up 2 goals against San Jose, but they scored 5. So it's like, who cares about that extra goal? And before that, they gave up 4-4-4-3-4-4-1-3-7. So like, assuming that Edmonton has their goaltending figured out, man, I think they're unstoppable. They are, I know you shared that they were going to be your cup pick a couple weeks back. They are mine.
Ah, you copied me. That's fair.
Sorry.
I like them. I mean, there's a lot of good teams, right? So we're probably just like putting all our eggs in one basket here. I mean, I like the Kings. I think they've been good. And I think like Copley might be like the type of goalie that like breaks some of these like stats. Like, hear me out, Brian. Like, you look at his game log and it seems like he has like mostly great games and then like sprinkled in really like terrible games that probably like just like make his overall numbers look like more like, you know, pedestrian or not as exciting. But it's like, yeah, he let in 4 goals in his last game of the season, but that was against Colorado, and that like was really bad on only 23 shots, so that's gonna like tank his save percentage. Before that, he had like 3 straight games of like 0-2-1. Then he had 6 goals against versus St. Louis, and then before that, five straight games of like 2-1 goal against, you know? So it's like generally he's been like really good. And then just like every once in a while, he just drops a bomb that tanks his numbers back to like normal. So anyway, for whatever that's worth, I think he's pretty good. And he's had a few bad games.
I mean, the numbers bear that out. He's started 35 games. He has 21 quality starts, a 60% quality start percentage, and 8 really bad starts. If you forget when I was talking about Yunus Korpisalo and how he had 8 really bad starts last year. Like, that's a really bad number for really bad starts. So the blowups have been big and numerous for Copley, but your eye test as you go through his numbers is perfectly reflected. If we just dig a little bit deeper, like, we can quantify that, mm-hmm. and your take makes sense, but I don't know what it means for playoff performance. So I guess we'll see. I still think Korpisalo should be the guy.
Yeah, at the end, probably there's going to be some really bad starts against this Oilers team. Obviously, another big story for LA is that Kevin Fiala, questionable for game one. We don't know if he's going to be back. Obviously, they paid big to get him, so it would be a bummer if now they don't have him for this important series. In his absence, like, Victor Arvidsson really turned things on to end the season, and he got back on the top power play, I guess, like, in Arvidsson's spot, or in Fiala's spot, I should say. And yeah, Arvidsson ended with 13 points in his final 12 games. Of course, that was buoyed by 3 assists versus Anaheim in the last game of the year, but hey, points are points, and Arvidsson's probably a guy that you might want to grab in your playoff pools late if he's still available, because he's been a big part of this Kings offense, like, especially if Fiala is going to be out, but maybe even if not. And then we also got to mention just quickly Adrian Kempe, another 40 goal season, and he was someone that people were a little bit disappointed on early in the year, like, oh, why did I draft him so high? In the end, turned out to be pretty much the same as last year.
Kempe hitting 40 goals again, basically the same way he did last season, by taking 3 shots per game and scoring on roughly, 15% of them, give or take. Also, 3 shorthanded goals for the second consecutive season for Adrian Kempe, which is big. It's not easy to rack up 3 shorthanded goals or even 3 shorthanded points over the course of a season. So give Adrian Kempe some credit for being consistent there. And those who are in pools where shorthanded points or goals give you a bonus, keep that in mind, because we have a big goal scorer. And I know earlier in the season, when Kempe was struggling, my advice was like, this, you might not continue struggling, but the margins are thin here. And yeah, they remained pretty thin for him. Honestly, I think the reason that Kempe was able to get all the way up to 40 this season was because he shot 20% on the power play. He's never done that before. He's shot 10% the last 2 seasons, and nothing seems to have substantially changed for Kempe under the hood on the power play. So I would expect, maybe going back to 35 points next season, back to, like, still those thin margins. Like, this is not a juicy 60, 65 point player. This is like a lean 60 point player who, if things just go a little bit wrong in the wrong direction, you're going to be concerned about. But hey, great season by Adrian Kempe. I don't mean to discredit what he's done at all. And Victor Arvidsson, you already covered. Good job.
Yeah. And then one other guy I'll just bring up is a good, I don't know if you call him a sleeper, but Evan Bouchard. I like wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the top D in this playoffs, or maybe like behind Makar.
You want to know in the KKPP who I drafted Bouchard after? Because I think he was forgotten. Like, if you're sorting, which generally you do for playoff polls, by fantasy points per game in the season, Bouchard's way down. You want to know who I drafted him after?
Let's hear it.
Devin Toews, Drew Doughty, Noah Crazy. Dobson, Hampus Lindholm.
Steel.
Petrangelo, Dunn, Hedman, Theodore, Burns, Sergachev, Montour. Like, I'm back in the third round already. I got Bouchard in the 7th.
It's amazing. Like, he had 11 points in his last 12 games. Like, basically ever since Barry left, Bouchard took over, and he's going to be on that top power play. He's crushing it. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him be, if not point per game, like 70 point pace. He's a big part of the Oilers offense now that he's on that top power play. And yeah, if you can get him as late as Brian did, I think that's going to help you win a lot of leagues. I mean, especially for ours, where we're only playing for the first round. I guess you're worried that Edmonton might win the series 4-0, it sounds like, so that could be a problem. But yeah, Bouchard, I think, is a great sleeper. And then I'd say, like, Ekholm is like a deep sleeper, because he's going to play a ton of minutes. I could see Ekholm getting like 28, 30 minutes a game, depending on how the series is going. But okay, Brian, with that, we did it. We got through all the series. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Hopefully, you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for sticking with us all season long. Like we said, next week, we're not going to be having a regular episode, but if you're a patron Keeping Carlson, you're still going to hear from us because we're going to have our monthly patron cast. So if you want to get in on that, just check out keepingcarlson.com/patron. Otherwise, we'll be back to talk to you in a couple weeks to talk about what happened in this first round and also to discuss why some people lost, even though they didn't deserve to, and crown who's going to get that pizza. And Brian, follow us on Twitter at Keeping Carlson, and we'll tweet out a form or something to fill out or at least a call to action of how to get in on that episode and stake your claim for why you think that you didn't deserve to lose even though you did. But with that, Brian, I had a really fun time chatting with you today, but I think it's time to cue that outro music. Why don't you read us the credits and take us out of here?
All right, sure thing. This episode of the Keeping Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast was presented by Dauber Hockey and powered by our patrons who... Again, like, join us if you want a sneak peek at what our community is about. Buck a month through the off season. You've missed the playoff pool, but not the patron cast and not the Kakuffle planning. If you're considering playing the Kakuffle next year, this off season is when we have like all kinds of talk about rules and tweaks and ideas. Like, basically every idea people have had for us through the season, we take. And we discuss. This is what makes the Kakuffle great. So come and join us in our Discord server. Anyway, our super supporters who are supporting us at substantially more than $1 per month. Adam, Aaron, Ivan, Andrea, Tom, Derek, David, Rob, Ricard, and Patty. Thank you all so much. And thank you to all our patrons who are sticking with us through the offseason. Thank you, Elon and Shams, for all the fancy news that keeps rolling over at GameDayTweets.com. Logo art by BrandonWeave.com. Outro music by Pat Roach. This episode was researched with help from Dauber Hockey, Frozen Tools, Dauber Prospects, Natural Stat Trick, Evolving Hockey, Cap Friendly, The Athletic, HockeyGoalies.org, Hockey Reference, Hockey Viz, Hockey Database, and Elite Prospects. No Yahoo.
Oh, okay. Well, great job as always, Brian. And do you have any recommendations for things we could maybe have in the back of our mind while we're enjoying the first round of the NHL playoffs?
Yeah, like it's a good time. You're watching the playoffs, you're hanging out with friends, getting together to watch games maybe, or watching on your whatever, talking on the internet, whatever you're doing, while you're enjoying the best time in the year of sports. Just do what you can to make sure that fantasy hockey is for everyone.